I begin by asking you what's a relatively obvious question at the moment with cricket facing its current dilemma, and that's, should the England team really be endorsing a regime such as Zimbabwe's by playing matches in that country? Do you have a personal view on that?
Well, it's a very topical point of view at the moment. The one thing about cricketers is that, in general, they only know about playing the game of cricket. It's only after cricket is over that people tend to get involved in business and other commitments. Not too many I've known have gone into politics, but one or two maybe will make quite good politicians. The situation with Zimbabwe is really, I believe, it's something up to a conversation between our government and the ECB. And the cricketers who are employed by the ECB, if there is a final decision made, they will abide by all of that. Otherwise, you get a great cross-section of players who will say, yes, I think we should go, no, we shouldn't go. And that's not building up a good harmony for a tournament that's going to be, well, it always is, a world-class tournament. And it costs a lot of money to stage, and it's a lot of money that's coming back to the various countries.
The trouble is, though, that the government has said, well, Nasser Hussain has said, first of all, that it's really for politicians to make that decision. He said it's a moral issue, and it's not for cricketers to have to take that decision. But the government has said all it's going to say, I think, on the issue. So who is going to take the decision, do you think?
Well, that's a good point. There is a meeting this week between the ECB and the government. I'm sure that the ECB will not come away from that without a very clear guideline as to who is going to make decisions on what. Because, to be quite honest, you cannot leave it any length of time. It's going to be in about 5-6 weeks' time when this World Cup's meant to be taking place. You cannot delay any length of time. Somebody's got to make the decision.
Do you think that people try to compare Zimbabwe and the apartheid regime in South Africa? Obviously, that the situation is very different because there was an official sporting boycott there. But some would say that what the regime is doing in Zimbabwe really has little bearing on cricket, whereas in South Africa, the regime had a bearing on the makeup of the team. So the situations are very different. In South Africa's case, cricket could justify boycotting the nation because the team was made only of whites, and the situation in Zimbabwe really has little to do with cricket, doesn't it?
A lot of that is absolutely true. Wherever you go to play cricket in the world, you're going to have a look and see what is the security like, what is the safety of the players. And that is paramount, and it has always been ICC's policy that wherever you take your cricket, that security of the players is of paramount importance. And when you've got the referees there for ICC as well, they've got to make sure that security is good. So from that point of view, one has to accept what ICC say, that the security in Zimbabwe is fine, and from that point of view they would be happy to allow the cricket to proceed. But it would be a debatable point whether it was anywhere else in the world. If there is something happens that is of national interest, you will always look and see whether or not there is security reasons or any other reasons politically why people shouldn't go there. Very difficult on your initial question to discuss or agree that there is a big difference between what was happening in the apartheid time of South Africa to what there is in Zimbabwe. We've moved on many years since then, but there is a problem there, like South Africa, that has got to be addressed.
Do you think, though, that in the end the overriding considerations may be the financial ones, because the government has said that if the ECB incur a fine for not playing in Zimbabwe, it won't pay it, and the ECB won't want to lose any money, will they?
No, they won't. And if reports are right in the media, that's a lot of money we're talking about. One would like to think that money doesn't come into it. You have to look at the situation about should this be taking place, and if at the end of the day that somebody says, well, it's going to cost you a penalty of X amount of money, then no doubt ECB will have to address that in due course. That would be catastrophic as far as English cricket is concerned, not because of an international point of view, but with the first class game in this country and 18 first class counties, they're all going to suffer financially if that did take place. Got to keep our fingers crossed that the payer doesn't go shape the wrong way on this occasion.
Do you think, though, that people still see cricket as somehow being a gentleman's sport, and people look to cricketers to have more moral courage maybe than in other sports?
It's a gentleman's game, but it's far more competitive now than it probably was sort of 30 or 40 years ago. And that's no bad thing for it. Whether people have got more moral thoughts on it, individuals will change. There were some outspoken people 30, 40, 50 years ago in the game of cricket. You will always have people with the personality, the character to be outspoken in some department, whether it's just in cricket or something else.
Can I move to your own 15 minutes of controversy that you endured in your career just over a year ago when you punished six Indian players for breach of the ICC code in South Africa? Looking back at that, could you accept that although the ramifications were negative for you as a person, that maybe they were rather better for the game of cricket because now we have a situation where referees are professional and players can appeal against punishments given to them if they think they were too harsh?
There's always something good will come out of whatever may have happened. Now that sounds very strange to say, but whenever you do anything in life, you can always sit back afterwards and say, well, how can I improve upon that? One thing I think certainly that's come out of it is that the whole review system has taken place. And yes, there's a situation that people can appeal, and I think that's quite right. People should be able to appeal for it. So if you look at what has happened now as the game has gone on, there's still been one or two players have been fined heavily for it, even in this last series, England and Australia, as it has in Pakistan, in the South African Pakistan. Pakistan team was fined for deliberate slow playing and slow over rates, etc. These are all part and parcel of it. We all want to keep the game going. We want competitiveness on the field of play. But the great thing is now that the players do know what their code of conduct and what their responsibilities is. And if they go beyond that bounds, they know exactly what that punishment may or may not be.
It sounds like you're saying that you still think that the punishments you gave were the right ones at that time.
Well, it's very easy in hindsight to turn back and say, I would rather have done something different. I look at my own career as an England captain. People ask that exact question. Why didn't I do something on the field of play? That is very easy on hindsight, but at the time, you make the positive decisions based on what advice you are given, how you want that game to run. So if people want to ask you the question, would I have changed? What I say is, you then sit back and say, what good can come out of that? How can I improve upon that, just as I've said earlier? So there's no changes take place. I think it has been a positive step that has happened here towards betterment of cricket worldwide.
Going back to that time, though, how did it make you feel? Because the Indians were accusing you of, at best, having double standards and, at worst, being prejudiced against players from the subcontinent. How did that make you feel?
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't, and I still haven't. I haven't really openly spoken about the events of South Africa. That was mainly because there was a... an inquiry was going on, and I'm not sure whether that inquiry has been finalised or not. But as far as I was concerned, it was something that happened a year ago, so I was then just forgetting all about it and letting cricket go in, because I'm no longer involved either as a referee or with ICC at all. So I've just let the whole thing run, and I don't really want to allow it to be brought to the fore again, because hopefully all the countries are accepting everything that is going, and we must be positive and let's go forward. Don't look back on what might or might not have been.
One of the things that you actually punished players for was for charging the umpire, if I remember rightly. Do you think that's something which has crept more into the game?
Many things have crept into the game. Some have been good, some have been bad. It's quite clearly written down that if people charge an umpire, it is attempting to intimidate the umpire. But is that any different to what has happened in the game of years gone by, when people used to walk when they hit the ball? People stand nowadays. There's far more television brings it in. Is there a lot of chit-chat goes on? The whole scenario of the game has changed. Television has brought it to our homes now. We can sit in our chairs and watch anywhere in the world there's a game of cricket. But the camera will focus on people. that's what television has done, and you can lip read and see everything that is going on. People have to ask the question, is that what we want to see? But because players are going to be competitive, and a little chat in the middle is not going to harm. Two or three paces towards an umpire appealing is not going to harm anybody. But if collectively things are done, and people feel that that is wrong for the game, then something has to be done.
What about the game in terms of technique and style and maybe even the pace of the game? Do you see many changes between when you played and now?
Big changes have divided up into one-day cricket and test cricket. One-day cricket is quite phenomenal nowadays, especially the fielding. We thought we were probably good fielders in our day, but we wouldn't live with the present-day players. Either they're a lot fitter, and B, the way they throw themselves around the ground, that was never part and parcel of our way of playing the game. Technically, well, there were some great players of the past, but there are great players of today, so there's a mix and match out of that. Test cricket has become probably more competitive now than it was before. It has always been competitive, but I think there's far more thought put into it now about how you're going to bowl, field settings, how players' weaknesses. You've got video cameras who are going to analyse. The coaches now spend the whole time analysing each individual. Now, that never happened nowadays because the facilities weren't available. The game of cricket, if you look at Australia, for instance, they will go at 4 or 5 runs an over. It was never heard of. It was sort of somewhere up to 3 runs an over in test cricket you would score. So, yes, there's a big, big change in the game. Most of it, I would say, is all to the better.
What about England at the moment? They've had a pretty sorry winter. Is it just down to the injury problems? They've had an awful lot of injury problems, obviously, over the winter. But it seems that every time England play badly, it's because of injuries, or people say it's because we play too much cricket. And it's a debate that rages on. What's the reason for their problems, and what can they do?
Well, I wish I knew what all the reasons might be, or the way forward out of all of that. Certainly, injuries that you have, especially on tour, are a major problem. But in this case, we are playing, well, at the time, Australia were the best in the world. I think if you look at what England has done in their build-up, playing against other countries, they've done exceedingly well. They've come back from being down in test matches to win test series. They've been competitive. In this first 90%, if you like, of this series, they will know that they haven't been competitive at all. They just kept losing the test matches. Whether that was to do with just the injuries and the morale on the side and people not playing. But they have won the test match. But they're all going to be realistic that when the Ashes series is over and you win that test match, just have a look about, well, how different was that Australian side without McGrath and Waugh in it? We all know that the Australians have got a great backup, but they have got good backup from a batting point of view. Have they got it from a bowling point of view? Now, that's not taking anything away from England's win, because I experienced it in 74-75 when we'd lost the Ashes and we won the last test match exactly the same way as Nasser. Great credit to the bulldog fight of England, that they have beaten the Aussies and they've done it, whether they've lost the Ashes or not, because I think that's tremendous. What they've got to do is now they've got to be competitive against South Africa and they've got to be competitive against Australia. They know they can be competitive against the others. And it's a discipline that they've got to have. And youngsters, give them the opportunity for it. I don't know what the real answer is going to be in the long run. We will just continue playing our game of cricket and developing the best players that we have in this country.
Some people might say that for the last game of the series, Australia might have just taken their foot off the gas.
I've never known any Aussie to take their foot off the gas, I have to say. They really want to win every time, and that is their competitive instinct. And when things go wrong, they actually do take it very much to heart. And they will analyse where they've gone wrong for it all. No, they haven't taken their foot off the pedal. I think we compliment England in particular. We look at Michael Vaughan to get the 200s in that match. Wherever you get 100, wherever you get a big 100, that's a tremendous effort.
When you were an opener, you built up a very good partnership, I believe, with another Kent player. Was it Brian Luckhurst? How important was that for you to build up a partnership, and how important is it for any team to have that strong opening partnership?
The game of cricket is built around pairs. It is partnerships, whether it is batting or bowling. And my my situation with Brian Luckhurst was, he was so totally different in the way that he played to the way I played, but it did complement each other, and we managed to keep the score ticking over the whole time. We understood each other. We ran well between the wickets. That's what it's all about. Because if you look over the history of the game, whether it is fast bowlers, whether it is spin bowlers, you can rattle them all off that they all bowled in pairs, so they were helping each other and complementing each other. And batting-wise as well, whether it is openers, whether it's the openers and number threes, the middle order, you will always be looking at that pair situation. And it is very, very important, because you must work together as a team.
How do you see then the future of English cricket in England as a whole, but also in the counties you know best, i.e. Essex and Kent, obviously as chairman of cricket there? Do you think that the future is good, or maybe are we lagging behind Australia in terms of facilities and maybe even coaching methods?
I don't think we're lacking behind in coaching methods. One or two facilities, yes, we can improve upon. I think it is purely and simply an attitude that we have to re-examine. We have to look at making sure that out of the broad spectrum we have of youngsters, we can actually get them to play a lot more cricket than they're doing at the moment. So we're going back to the school situation, and there is a lot played, but we've got to work hard at that. We at Kent, or whether it's Essex or anywhere else, will then look at pulling these youngsters that we think have got the potential out, so we can almost sort of, if you like, fast track them through from whether it's an age of 11 and 12 up to the age of 17, something that we've never done before. But that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to take some time to develop and put in place, and that's where the national academies, each centre around the country, will be of great benefit to us. So if you look at Australia, who it took them 10 years to get into their present situation, I hope it won't take us 10 years, but it might take us 4 or 5 years to get where we want to go.
And what does the future hold for you and your involvement of cricket? We've just talked about you being chairman of Kent, but would you consider being re-nominated to be an ICC referee?
I don't think so. I think the time has come that when you've done something and you've enjoyed it, you take a back seat and you look to new pastures. I've got involvement at the moment. I'm chairman of cricket at Kent, which involves quite a lot of work. I chair one meeting at ECB, and I'm on another committee there. So from a cricket point of view, I've got enough cricket. At times, I go overseas with England supporters groups, and I host them on behalf of a travel company called Gulliver Sports Travel, that wherever that might be. That's enjoyable, because you meet up with old friends and you have a great camaraderie, because you're talking about the game of cricket and we're seeing international cricket being played. So from that point of view, I've got enough in cricket that I'm not sure that I want any more.
And just one final question. When you look back over your career, are there any moments which you could pick out as perhaps your proudest, or ones which you care to remember more often?
Well, you tend to remember all the highlights and the good points. You should always actually remember the bad ones as well. And there are a few bad ones, I have to say, that are there. But there are highlights. I mean, the success that we had in the 1970s at Kent was brilliant to be part of that, and to win the trophies as we did. When I came over to Essex to be part of their team when they won the championship and they won the Benson Hedges for the first time ever, they'd never won a trophy before. That was great. From an England point of view, various performances, whether it was in this country or overseas, the runs that you scored, the series that you won. I would have to say that yes, there's been ups and downs, but it was thoroughly enjoyable, and I have no regrets.
Thanks very much for talking to me.
My pleasure.